Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But you never know who you might run into in the hallways of KMOX, and I've grabbed him here for a little bit in the studio. Chris Kerber, voice of the Blues. How are you, man?
I am awesome. I am glad to be home with seven of the first nine games on the road out of the way, so we'll get into a little home cooking, which will be good.
How was Vegas? Was that a little weird?
It was a little weird, when you get off the plane, and you know the airport right there is right next to everything, and so you see all the lights, and to realize, and I think what made it weird is just it was a whole brand new thing. We had never gone there for an NHL regular season game.
You've been there before, though,
I had
right?
been there a couple times before, and so you know you get the lights, you know there's that excitement, that vibe, and you know Las Vegas is so much more than the Strip, but that is what you
sure.
know the one thing is, and. And so the atmosphere was great. They put the building that, you know, they built it right on the Strip. So it's, you know, you walk out and there's just a sea of people.
So where is it? I'm trying to envision it. Where is it on the Strip? Is it toward Old Vegas or toward Mandalay Bay?
It is literally right across the street from the Monte Carlo Resort and Casino. And right next door to New York, New York.
Wow, I didn't realize that. That's a great location. Yeah. I had no idea that's where it was. I was thinking sort of off-site. So,
You know, the league has made plenty of great mistakes. Like, they moved from downtown Phoenix out to Glendale, you know, and then so it's a 40-minute ride for anybody from Scottsdale to go there. That's been a huge problem there. When they built the building in Ottawa, they built it where traffic-wise it could take you 50 minutes outside of downtown to get there. And so now they're building a new building 20 years later in Ottawa in a better spot. They did it the same thing. You know, you've got the building in Sunrise, you know, which is, you know, not really Miami or Fort Lauderdale where a bunch of the population is. And this one, they got it right. They put it right where everybody is.
And, you know, you get a little entertainment after the game as well.
That's exactly.
Not that there'd be anything wrong with that, right. For fans and broadcasters. So, You brought a these are cool beer steins. This is the giveaway. I've been giving away tickets for this game on Wednesday night, and that's the giveaway for Wednesday for the fans?
Yeah, for Wednesday night, first 12,000 fans, 21 and older, get a Budweiser beer stein. It's become one of the more popular, you know,
it's
giveaways
cool.
every year. You know, for years, and they haven't done it in a while, but it was like, 25 straight years they did the Maxwell House coffee mug. You know, and then they've kind of brought that back, but in the form of a beer stein. And this is the third year we've done it. It's pretty good.
I'm excited because I am. I told you, and I've been mentioning this a couple of times. My listeners are probably sick of it. I'm moving this week, and I'm off for a few days. But I have a pretty good collection of Blues and Cardinals and Tigers memorabilia.
Yep.
Little Packers mixed in there too. And I finally have a little bit more space to display those things, including a bar in my basement. So I've never had a bar before. I don't drink, so it's a little ironic.
I've only had one, and I love it. I built a bar in my old house. I built it myself, and I cut out the front of it and slid a 55-gallon fish tank up to the front.
Did you really?
The front facade of the bar I built was a fish tank.
But you don't have that anymore?
No. Well, I built it, and it was a small, narrow basement, so when we sold that house, I said you get to keep the bar because I couldn't move it upstairs.
I didn't know you were handy that way, Kerbs. That's good information. That's good recon. Well, assess this team right now.
I think it's a great start considering the injuries. I think they've had an excellent start. The one thing I got to see with the team being on the road so much is I think this team has come together very well in short order. I think it's become a very tight group already, and I think that means a lot. I think the coaching has been excellent. I think what we've seen, some of the in-game adjustments, how things have been handled, I think this entire coaching staff deserves a ton of credit for where the team has done. And to start with seven of your first nine on the road and go 4-2-1 in those seven games,
I'd say that's pretty good.
That's banking some
points.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and I've told you this before, and I mentioned it. I just love, for years, I've loved Jaden Schwartz, and he's kind of like my favorite player on this team. And he's had a great start, hasn't he?
He's found another level. He's had a terrific start. He's one of the league leaders in points. He's one of the league leaders in goals. He has had a fantastic start, and they needed him. I mean, with all these injuries, it wasn't just who's going to fill in and take over. It's is Schwartz, is Tarasenko, is Petrangelo, is Parayko. Are these guys going to take another level and become more dominant? And Jaden Schwartz has done just that.
All right, Curbs, thanks for dropping in. The Beer Steins, the giveaway to the first how many fans?
First 12,000 fans, 21 and older.
Awesome. We'll hear you on the game on Wednesday night.
You got it. Thanks, Mark.
And we're back in a moment on KMOX.
Making America great since 1925. KMOX.
Hey, tomorrow on the show to talk about Prop P in the city of St. Louis to help pay for salary increases for first responders. St. Louis Police Chief, Interim Police Chief Lawrence O'Toole will be here. Guess who wants to come on the show, I heard? And I'm a little shocked by this, and some of you might be shocked by it too. The mayor of the city of St. Louis, Elida Crewson, who hasn't been on in a while, and quite honestly, she hasn't been invited because I've not been very pleased with the job that she's doing, although I'm open to a visit. The problem is that we did not have time today, and tomorrow Chief O'Toole is on, so the schedule didn't allow it. But if they're listening at the mayor's office, and of course they do, or at least they hear what I say, gets reported back to them, more than willing to have the mayor on, and we'll set it up for next week because I'm going to be off the remainder of the week. But I must say candidly that when that appearance takes place, that there will be some pretty tough questions about just the reaction to some of this nonsense right now. I mean, they're spending time today again at the Board of Aldermen on investigating police and the police response to the Stockley verdict. How about investigate the 100, I don't even know where we're at right now. We're at 160 murders last week, 151 of them African-Americans, each and every suspect black, everyone. But I saw another protest. I was watching Fox last night, Fox 2, at 9 o'clock. I tuned in after I watched The Walking Dead, which, by the way, let me just say this about The Walking Dead. I was very excited about that, but I was a little underwhelmed by the season premiere. Maybe it's just me. I don't want to spoil anything because I know people watch it on the DVR. But, man, I got my hopes up, and I think this is going to be a season that moves in a very positive direction. But the opening of the first episode seemed a little too Braveheart and, you know, didn't move along as much as I had anticipated. But it sets it up for later season. But I turned on Fox 2, and I saw more protesters, unless it was file footage of the Black Lives Matters and Stop Killing Us and all that. Who's being killed? We know who's being killed. Mainly black men in the city of St. Louis. Now, I saw the mayor said something along the lines of, well, we can have, these things are not mutually exclusive. We can have conversations about both. Well, we don't have conversations about both. That's my whole point. We only have conversations about the cops. We don't have these other conversations. And it's going to take some guts, in my opinion, for the mayor, she hasn't shown any yet, to be willing to call nonsense on some of the BS that's been happening with the protesters. I've said this multiple times in the past 3 years, ever since Mike Brown. Of course there's legitimate issues when it comes to the police and how they behave in certain situations, but it's not the entire department, and it's certainly very isolated, and the cops are not killing your kids, if you're black and you live in the city of St. Louis. They're not killing you. There's been 8 times that police have killed a suspect in this city so far this year. I think it's 8. It was 8 as of the summer, so I'm not going to say it's not 9 or 10 at this point. Each and every one of those suspects had a gun. So what are you supposed to do if you're a cop? You know, not defend yourself? Where all the kids are being shot. So we'll find out. The mayor said that she was appalled by the Stockley verdict within minutes of the verdict being issued. She didn't even have time to read it at that point, I don't think. So hopefully we'll get her on here soon to answer some of those questions. Let me play this. I thought this was relatively interesting and entertaining. Campus Reform is a website out there. They do some fun stuff. I've played their audio before. They went out to the campus of George Washington University, and they asked a couple questions about the tax plan, and they told a little lie, a little tiny lie here when they did it.
You are fake news.
Now, to a certain extent, it was. Here we go.
week, Donald Trump released his new tax plan, which was immediately shot down by his political opponents on the left. But what would those same people think if they were told that that tax plan was actually Bernie Sanders' plan? Today, we're at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. to find out. So Bernie Sanders came out with his plan. Some people call it the compassionate alternative. So we're getting opinions on Bernie's plan. First, one of Bernie Sanders' plans is to enhance the child tax credit, which is tax money given back to families when they have children. What do you think of that? Positive or negative?
Positive.
All right.
Same. I was a social worker, so I understand how important tax credits like that are.
Parents that have children go through a lot, and I think giving back money to them really, in turn, helps the children.
All right, so that's remember, this is under the guise of Bernie Sanders. They love it. They think it's great.
I think that's great.
I think that's positive, definitely.
Positive, definitely.
Next up, eliminating the death tax. So when people die, it's a large tax on their estate that goes to their family. What do you think of that?
Oh, we'll be curious to see here, because that's just a tax break for the wealthy, right? That's what we've heard.
I think that's definitely something that we should be doing.
I do think that's a good idea, because I'm from New Jersey and we used to have like a really heavy inheritance tax.
I'm in favor of that.
I would say more positive.
I think I agree with that.
Bernie is planning to lower the small business tax rate to a maximum of 25%. I think that's a positive or negative?
I definitely think that's a positive.
I feel very positively toward that.
My family has a small business, so I would definitely think that's a positive thing.
Taxing them less makes more sense.
Any way we can help small businesses work and like thrive, it's definitely something that's beneficial for the country.
Unless you live in the city of St. Louis, and then they do everything they can to make it more difficult. But that's another topic. So then the big reveal here.
Overall, main idea of the plan, what do you think? Bernie did a good job, bad job?
I think overall, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
All
good
right.
Job, Bernie.
I think it's a definitely good plan, a positive plan that can help everyone.
I think it's pretty good. Like, definitely better than whatever Trump is proposing. I would make that leap right there. So.
What if I told you this actually is Donald Trump's tax plan, not Bernie's?
You got me.
It is. It's Trump's plan. All of these are actually Trump's ideas. It's actually Trump's plan.
What?
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. Wow.
I am shocked that I do agree with Trump on certain things.
Okay.
Interesting. Interesting.
I'm definitely happily surprised that it's like sounds a lot better than I would have expected it to.
I would have imagined he would be a little more stupid than that.
Okay. So, but it's not a stupid plan?
No, I don't think so.
But I think if you said it was Trump, at least for many people it would be more opposition to it just
you
because
think?
It was Trump.
It could be a policy of giving me ice cream, but if it's Trump, I'd be like, what's in that ice cream?
I definitely think there's an initial bias. I mean, I've done it myself. Like, I'll just like hear the word Trump and I'm like, ugh. I definitely think that's something to like need to be like looked over.
People, once they hear Trump or like Republican, they become like, oh, they suck no matter what.
I think people definitely hear the name and start to think things automatically. And also because a lot of people just go to the same news sources, the same media, it makes it tough to get other points of views.
Yes, that's exactly right, right? Now, I've said for years, for a long time here, I've asked many of my guests, including former RNC chair Reince Priebus, former White House chief of staff, my friend Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, and many other Republicans, because I think that one of the big issues that Republicans have is that they don't market their stuff very well. And I think you would find example after example, if campus reform or if me or another group went out there and they asked people, what you think of this idea? Maybe you don't even have to lie about it. Maybe you have to say, okay, here's an idea. What do you think about it? You don't have to say it's Bernie Sanders. And the gut check would be from most people in this country, including perhaps millions who voted for Donald Trump. Now you start getting into the wackadoos, then there's going to be another issue, right? You would think that the red flag would go up there. And they'd understand that that's not something they would support, even if Bernie Sanders supported it. But maybe you shouldn't assume that. But time and time again, there is that inherent bias that can't be overcome. Good experiment from Campus Reform. I thought they did a nice job with that.
Kelly Chase here, and the Blues return home Wednesday night for a face-off against Jaromir Jagr and the Calgary Flames. Pre-game at 6:30, face-off at 7, right here on your voice of the St. Louis Blues Hockey, KMOX.
I got this guy I went to high school with, my buddy Art Karen, went to Parkway West with me. He is a restaurant general manager in Cleveland, Ohio. I always like to say Cleveland, like Cleveland, like Howard the Duck. And he sent me this piece because he was tracking, and he's always tracking as a restaurant guy, trends. And one of the trends out there, well, actually several of them, has to do with the way that our appetite is changing overall in a variety of ways and how that affects the restaurant industry. And there was a guy by the name of Aaron Allen who wrote a piece about this, about how our changing appetite is throwing up some big red flags to folks in the restaurant business. I invited him to come on here to talk about it. Aaron, how are you?
Terrific, thanks.
So as I was mentioning, I have a good friend of mine, went to high school with here in St. Louis and college. He's in the restaurant business, and he sent me your piece about how our appetite is changing and how it could affect the restaurant business. And you list some things in here that I think that people might not expect, including the dependence on opioids and other prescription drugs. So I guess maybe the first thing we could do is sort of come out of the gate here with your hypothesis from this piece about the way that our appetite is changing and how it's going to affect the food industry.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. There are consumer dining behaviors and retail consumption trends that are changing and faster than most restaurant chains can actually comprehend. Restaurant executives around the country are trying to figure out where their customers have gone and why their dining rooms are empty. Nearly 70 million Americans have dramatically altered their diets in just the last 3 to 5 years. So Americans are filling their stomach in amazing and alarming new ways, really. Caffeine, coffee consumption, diet pills, appetite suppressants, opioids and painkillers, antidepressants, alcohol, stimulants, and sleep aids. And all of these are on a per capita basis that the increases have dramatically spiked in just a few years. So it's really having an effect on the restaurant industry, on kind of the population. Part of our hypothesis is it's actually affecting hospitality. There have been studies that have shown that these opioids and painkillers can actually dull the sense of empathy. For the hospitality industry, that's so incredibly important for restaurants in an expression of service and hospitality to care for the guest. If opioids and painkillers are having such a dramatic effect, as clearly we're seeing that they are, it can affect service levels even in restaurants. But really what led us to look at this is the dramatic shifts that have happened in restaurant consumer dining behaviors and trends, which restaurants are doing well, which restaurants are not doing well. Mm-hmm. And as you start to look at it, there are a lot of other factors that are influencing performance. And it's not just rise of fast casual and food trucks and delivery. It's actual consumption of how we're filling our stomachs in alarming new ways.
Now, you're saying that some of that is really as recent as 3 to 5 years?
A lot of these trends are actually the last 3 to 5 years. So many of these aren't even showing up on what you would consider typical corporate SWOT analysis and corporate planning. They've happened that fast. McDonald's CEO recently, 2 years ago, as part of their turnaround strategy, said, look, the world has changed more outside the business in the last 5 years than it's changed inside the business. And it was a wake-up call for McDonald's that realized that they really needed to do more to understand where the consumer is moving and how it's reshaping their business. But it's a ripple effect throughout the restaurant industry that's affecting most restaurants, particularly incumbent restaurant chains.
One of the stats you throw in here is that 294 million Americans, 91% of the population, snack multiple times per day, reducing restaurant meal occasions by tens of millions. Now, I might be a good example of that because I eat some breakfast and then I don't like to eat before my show. Not everyone has a radio show, but I snack a little bit during the day, some almonds, and then I go back and have somewhat of a healthy dinner. But I will tell you quite candidly, I used to go out to lunch almost every day, maybe not out to lunch, but pick up something. Our folks here in St. Louis from St. Louis Bread Company and Panera won't like this, but I felt like I was in there almost every day, and I've just sort of backed up on that for a variety of reasons. And I guess that's what's happening. People change their habits, and they don't go to the same places they used to be, and I guess some of it's because of health consideration. Some of it might be economics and financial, but all of that amounts to less demand for those restaurants.
It is. It does result in less demand, and it's a convergence of a lot of what look like independent trends that have converged together to have dramatic impact on many industries, but particularly for consumer food service, which is half of all of what we spend in the United States on food we spend in restaurants. Half of that we spend in fast food, and half of that is allocated to just the top 10 largest fast food restaurant chains in the country. So Americans are very used to cheap calories, and it's leading to chronic malnutrition. We spend about $220 billion a year on fast food, and about $120 billion a year just on obesity-related health problems. So Americans have been used to spending less as a percentage of their income than any other society on earth on food.
Yeah, that's kind of stunning. I saw that stat, and I'm like, well, maybe I haven't thought of that before, but that's relatively dramatic, I would say.
It is. We spend less than 7%. So almost every other developed country on the planet spends upwards of 15%. So you really see these lower percentage amounts of income spent on food and restaurants, but particularly on food, in Western societies where we have a prevalence of fast food restaurants. So it's part of the answer is that it's leading to a rise of a more nutritionally aware, cause-conscious set of chains and consumer. So there's actually a positive in all of this, that it might actually get so bad that we realize that it really needs to start to change and improve. And certainly some restaurant chains have started to do that. From a consumer point of view, vegan and vegetarian options have dramatically increased. The population, the amount of Americans that are vegan or vegetarian has dramatically increased in the last 3 to 5 years. We've seen this big uptick in healthy meal kit and delivery options. More of a fresh-focused restaurant and convenience-oriented business model that's starting to emerge, and a sense of corporate social responsibility, and actually purpose-driven brands are being rewarded for doing right by the consumer and the communities that they serve, both in terms of increased restaurant traffic and also in terms of their financial performance and market capitalization.
What would be an example of a purpose-driven company or restaurant?
Well, Chipotle, until they hit the skids in the last few years, would have been, you know, one of those that really focused on their food with integrity message, and it resonated very well throughout the U.S. and created a company that was worth almost $22 billion in market capitalization within just a 20-year period. They lost half of that market capitalization because of food safety issues and what happened there. So 12.
Did they lose? They lost. So the E. coli thing comes along. They lose half the capitalization.
They lost almost as much as the capitalization of all casual dining restaurant chains in the U.S. combined.
That's stunning. Aaron Allen is my guest. He's a global restaurant consultant, and I came across this piece, Surprising Ways America's Appetite is Changing. So what, you know, you talked about some of the positives there, and there are restaurant change adapting. I mentioned Panera here in St. Louis. I think they've done a really good job at that. But when it comes to the rest of the restaurant business, the sit-down restaurant business, the good stuff that's not good for you, that's healthy, but it tastes great, what do restaurants like that do?
Well, they're all grappling with this, and it's actually around the world, really, that you know these large Western brands, both fast food and what we call quick service restaurants and casual dining restaurant chains, have suffered. Sales are flat across most of these categories. A bit more traffic this year for QSR fast food restaurant operators, but it's forcing them to rethink their menu, their operating model, increased costs from commodities to rent to labor because of minimum wage and overtime rulings and the rest of it are all converging together on restaurant chains to force them to rethink how they're operating, how they're expanding the footprint and operational models that they're using. So it's really creating a very dramatic period of kind of reinvention for particularly incumbent restaurant brands that are having to adapt to evolving consumer dining behaviors, new trends that are impacting the industry. And certainly this kind of cause-conscious or purpose-driven piece, when you see companies like Chipotle and Panera Bread that have done so well by investing in technology, particularly in the case of Panera Bread, with their investments in technology and catering and food responsibly kind of oriented food menu programming and culinary point of view, they have been greatly rewarded in terms of the investment that they've received in both institutional investment and they were recently purchased, but part of what's driven that value has been their own underlying set of values. In fact, there was a study that showed that those companies that are adding the most in market capitalization currently show quite a common thread in terms of being a purpose-driven company that's focused on more than profits alone, that's also focused on how to better serve the community, the customer, and the employees. So when you see companies like Starbucks that have made college tuition available to fast food workers throughout their entire system. You can see that it's one of the things that has catapulted their growth. They have more engaged workforce, and at the same time have a product that resonates well with the American consumer, maybe to a bit too much of a degree that we're all consuming so much caffeine in the mornings now and sleep aids at night to try to fall back asleep. It's creating a new dynamic there. But overall, these movements are forcing large multi-billion-dollar restaurant chains to rethink their business strategy and creating opportunities for startups that can spot the trends ahead of time and move forward.
Yeah, get ahead of the curve, right. Thank you so much for coming on here. I'm going to put the piece up on our website, KMOX.com/Mark, Surprising Ways America's Appetite is Changing. A lot of restaurant folks here in St. Louis. We'll try to keep them ahead of the curve on this. And, Aaron, I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Great speaking with you.
3:45 at KMOX. We have an audio cut of the day coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Chris Raby is in the house. He'll be here at 4:15 with sports. I must tell you, you know, I've been bragging a lot about the NFL picks. We do the NFL picks every week. I have yet to spin the wheel of punishment. I have not come in last place in the NFL picks to date, except now I have. In fact, I lead these guys, or at least I did. 56 picks correct. 3 picks better, I think, than Ben Boyd, and I fell apart this week. I got cocky. Raby and I actually tied. His mother did his picks for him, and we tied, but I lost the tiebreaker on the Chiefs game the other night. We picked the final score. So I got to spin this thing. Now, one thing I haven't checked is, you might remember Dave Klein and I, my producer, we flipped a quarter on every game just to sort of test a theory out, and I haven't done the math on whether or not the quarter was better than me on the picks, but I'm guessing that it was. We have an audio cut of the day coming up next on KMOX.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
This afternoon's audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Good Feet Arts Support's immediately available, coming for your free test walk today. And I have to do something related to the Border War Showdown, the charity exhibition game, KU, Mizzou, Tigers, and Jayhawks. They raised, well, I think I gave fake news earlier because I said 1.2 million. 1.75 million for hurricane relief efforts, which is just amazing how much money they raised. So Mizzou loses the game, but they put up a good fight. At one point, they took the lead midway in the second half or so, maybe like the 15-minute mark, 6 points, and then KU just started roaring over them, and the Tigers made it close. But keep in mind, the KU team will be ranked probably number 3 preseason, 3 or 4, according to some of the polls right now. And the Tigers won't be ranked. I don't think they're going to be ranked, although maybe after this. But this was the worst team in the SEC. Obviously, a reshuffling of the lineup, pretty much, a new coach. And the question then becomes, after a good showing yesterday, do you want to play KU on a regular basis? You want to reignite this border war? Here's Konzo Martin.
You want to play the game. This is a great program. Bill has done a tremendous job. Anytime you win the league, what, 13 straight years, that's impressive. Of course, we love the player, but I think, you know, both sides have to agree upon something like that. I mean, you saw the energy behind it. We'll see. I think we did enough to, and our fans, both sides, said it possibly could happen. I thought it was great across the board.
I sat there yesterday, did not buy the pay-per-view. I heard that people who bought it had some technical problems, so I'm glad I didn't spend the $40, but I was following a KU blog from the Kansas City Star and then a blog from Mizzou fans and just kind of watched the scoring take place as I was watching football. It was pretty exciting. And you got to see not only Michael Porter Jr. scored 21 points. He was disappointed with the 21 points. I love that. His brother Jonte and, you know, Tillman and all these guys, like the kid from Canisius, it's going to be a fun year. But listen to this. Bill Self, former Illinois coach, current KU coach. You want to play Mizzou?
We're going to do what's best for us. We're not interested in doing what's best for Missouri or best for Missouri fans, but if it's best for us to play them, we will. So it's not a complicated deal. But I figured we'd talk about the game or talk about raising a lot of money. I didn't think that'd be the second question out of the chute. But I'm not going to say never, but I don't think that there's been any change in our position as far as the university goes. I'm the spokesman, I guess, on this, but trust me, I'm not the only one that feels that way. There was a very large contingent of KU people that wasn't happy that we were doing this initially until they realized it was for a good cause. But certainly, what happens, a few years from now, certainly not what we're talking or thinking about right now.
That's the head coach of Kansas, Bill Self, playing the role of the whiny little rhymes with witch. What's the hang-up that he would have about simply reigniting that rivalry? Especially when, let's face it, 90% of the time, 80% of the time, KU's going to win that game. Probably. I mean, maybe not now. But why is it such a tough question for him to even answer? And why did the Chicken Hawk fans raise objection just to a charity game against Mizzou? I just baffled. You know, I haven't hated KU as much in the past few years because we don't have the rivalry. Now I hate them even more than I used to.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.